I'm not actually going to talk about the great divergence so much. I'm going to talk more about the great acceleration, which is actually the great post-war economic growth in East Asia and parts of Southeast Asia in the second half of the 20th century. But I want to link these two great greats. So I'll explain what great acceleration means in a moment, but let me start with Ken Pomerantz's references to Core and North America. The Great Divergence debate had been primarily carried out in relation to the relative standard of living, real wages, incomes, and so on. But the other side of the Great Divergence is the question of resources, particularly resource bonanza. The Great Divergence also meant that there were actually several places in East Asia, South Asia, elsewhere, where the growth of the market and division of labor had been reasonably in progress, and we can have a kind of Smithian growth without mechanized industrial output. Why, and only in England, it diverged from this general pattern of Smithian growth. This is another way of putting the meaning to the issue of great divergence. In the meantime, as we have already heard, East Asia and some Southeast Asian countries went through industrialization, beginning first in Japan in the 19th century, and the region, however, has been transformed into the fastest growing major user of energy resources by the second half of the 20th century. Were there an identifiable resource-enhancing route equivalent to Core and North America for Asia's economic development? So this is the question that I want to address. This presentation suggests that there was such a route for Japan in 1880 to 1930, and another much more comprehensive route for growth parts of Asia since 1960 to the present. I am going to talk a little bit about what the growth acceleration means in the first section of this presentation, and then pose two questions. The first one is how the organic economy shifted to the coal fossil fuel economy, and we compare England and Japan. And the second one is how the basic livelihood in monsoon Asia, which was basically driven by water and food and energy provisions, was very rapidly replaced by the fossil fuel-driven resource nexus in Asia for the last 70 years. And I think the speed of this had been never seen in Europe. Now, the Great Acceleration had been coined by various people, but I just cite International Geosphere Biosphere Program when it ended in 2015 and replaced by Future Earth. It states that the second half of the 20th century is unique in the history of human existence. Many human activities reached takeoff points sometime in the 20th century and sharply accelerated towards the end of the century. So the last 60 years, this stops in 2010, the statistics, have without doubt seen the most profound transformation of the human relationship with the natural world in the history of mankind. IGBP compiled two sets of data, socioeconomic indicators and Earth system trends, each with 12 indicators. It doesn't cover very well for historians, so the graph can be very misleading. This is very often cited in UN and Future Earth and Global Sustainability Studies circles. And this is just nonsensically combined all these. And you can see that they want to say that the greatest acceleration occurred around 1960 or so, And to prove that, they had to go back to 1750, where you have, they lack some kind of expertise. The socio-economic trends mainly consist of population, real GDP, urban population, and particularly primary energy use. I am not going to be able to explain any more than this. And Earth system trends actually involves much more diverse, actually, indicators discovered more recently by scientists, carbon dioxide, etc. And but in my to my the best of my knowledge, no one actually calculated the share of Asia in that great acceleration for the last 70, 60 years. And a preliminary study suggests that roughly half of the increase, not the proportion, but increase since 1960 came from Asia in terms of the first four basic socioeconomic indicators of population, real GDP, urban population, and primary energy supply. That is to say, the energy source change tradition, and particularly urbanization, have been among the main drivers of environmental intensification. Some of them, especially Asia's population proportion in world primary supply in 1960 was very low. We are very much driven by the biomass, biomass energy, a lot of water, and so a lot of forests actually. Then it suddenly changed. So resource base had been changed to biomass energy to fossil fuels. This is the one, and I think the proportion of Asian supply or consumption still remains less altogether, not in direct comparison between China and the United States. But the rate of increase in the more recent period is actually quite spectacular, and I think if you want to understand the future of resources, you really have to look at not just China, but growth parts of Asia. This exercise also reveals that socioeconomic trends are largely regionally identifiable, while some of the Earth system trends indicators, such as global warming indicators, are more globally oriented, so it's kind of difficult to disaggregate. But it's not impossible. And if we compare Asia's trends with Earth system indicators, we find that two distinctive phases, and basically this is what I would like to propose. It's just, until 1950, there was actually a global industrialization, but it's pretty much driven by Western industrialization. And this was replaced very clearly by West Asia fusion. Now, I am going to do the first presentation that had been very recently done. It's completely new. You know this one. It's Paul Ward, Energy Consumption in England and Wales, and has been cited by Rigori. It's a kind of energy consumption estimates in England and Wales, 1560 to 1850, pretty long-term trends with lots of estimates. But you know, the high organic economy that Rigori had illustrated included use of draft animals and human power, firewood, etc. And this was replaced by coal. Now, this is Japan. Japan was extremely forest rich, extremely land scarce. This does not, I'm sorry to say, include human power, so it doesn't talk about the industrial revolution. We haven't actually managed to include traditional water power wheels. We have a lot of water wheels, and they are not included. But and sailing ships also. But general trend is quite similar. You get a much faster transition from firewood and charcoal to coal. initial stage of Japan's industrialization and production of raw silk and tea had been fueled by timber. And this was quickly replaced by coal. And we had also exported quite a lot of coal and exports of manufactured goods to other Asian countries were fueled by coal. So it's in terms of ecological footprint fashion, it's actually embodied, coal is embodied in its exports. So Japan benefited just like in England, both from the domestic production of coal and imports of raw materials and food, raw cotton, rice, soybeans, and sugar. Of course, colonial rule was kind of important. Sugar in Taiwan and rice in Korea secured, and it, what it meant that Korean rice actually was embodied, the water and land in these countries was embodied in the Japanese imports. But it also was perhaps more important in earlier period. Japan benefited from imports from Western colonies in South and Southeast Asia, as well as from Manchuria. So this was the age of imperialism, of free trade, and this was inter-Asian trade that was equivalent to North America for England. So we had coal and inter-Asian trade instead of coal and North America. Both vertical land expansion, which is coal, and horizontal land expansion, access to Asian countries, made it possible for Japan to industrialize. So the final topic is about the transformation of monsoon Asia. And this is a much bigger and rougher picture. You probably have heard Hari Oshima's economic development in monsoon Asia. It described the socio-ecological characteristics of monsoon Asia across South Asia, East Asia, and Southeast Asia, in which water and air circulation drove the use of resources. Intensive rice farming provided the population carrying capacity, which is why Asia had a much larger population than Europe, which in turn offered the basis for the unlimited supplies of labor for industrialization in a Louisian model fashion. This did not easily bring the economic development with the rise of living standards, as we have heard. The breakthrough came from the globalization of resource base in the 1960s, first in Japan, followed by South Korea and Taiwan, and eventually absorbed by China. So what is the equivalent to coal and North Africa, America here in the first Asian miracle, the second Asian miracle story? Energy base shifted from coal to oil pretty fast. The materials from cotton to cotton and timber and light industry, labor intensive industry based economic development was replaced to steel and petrochemical products, man-made fiber and plastics especially. So it looks like this. In 1962 Energy Commission, Japan had completely changed course and began to depend on oil rather than on coal, a great divergence from the German policy at that time. We had completely been dependent on oil in the, at the time of 1973 oil crisis. And then we started doing securing natural gas and a little bit of nuclear power and others before the clean energy age had started in this century. So coal to oil transition was absolutely crucial for Asia's rapid industrialization story. Traditional water, food, energy nexus was pretty common in the more developed and the populated part of monsoon Asia, sometimes people call maritime monsoon Asia, the availability, timing, and predictability of water largely determine the value of land in terms of how much food it produced. I hope that Tathanka Roy will elaborate on this theme further later on. As far as energy is concerned, it was largely biomass energy. 1952 UN estimates actually quite clearly contrasts that Asia was primarily fueled by biomass, while Western Europe, United States, and other places were fueled by coal or oil. The energy markets of timber and fossil fuels in Asia were integrated into the world economy only relatively recently, and initially only regionally. I can elaborate this further, but I won't. Thus, there was a relatively autonomous local regional nexus, and this is the constraints of local resource that had been determining the course of path of economic development in a way that it promoted labor-intensive rather than capital-intensive industrialization. Now, urbanization and globalization changed this completely. The global pattern of resource use emerged. So in Japan, the introduction of the seafront industrial complex along the Pacific coast, there were four of them, by the developmental state, combined imported oil and minerals with labor, water, and domestic transport networks. So this is the first place where Monsoon Asia nexus had met the global resources, oil from the Middle East, minerals from Australia, etc. National land development plans elaborated multiple purpose dams, while urban population was addressed by citizens' movements and local governments. This is the age where all these pollution and very painful experience of diseases, industrial pollution had occurred. Natural costs were repressed by reclaimed land. The combination and fusion of domestic and imported resources created synergies and trade-offs, which is the subject of this recent FWF nexus, in as water, energy, food nexus literature. How much? Oh, it's okay. This is Tokyo Bay, and if you can see that the most reclamation projects were connected to the development of industrial factories facing the bay. After the red part is the reclaimed in between 1965 and 73. And after the 1970s, the driver of development shifted from economic needs to the more socially and environmentally acceptable goals. Reclamation of diverse purposes emerged, and now we have we are proud of this doing new reclamation places with industrial waste, which has killed two or three birds in one stone. So this coincided with the broader ideological change from developmentalism to civil minimum and sustainability. But I have been studying the history of reclamation in China and many other places in South Korea and Taiwan. Here in Tokyo, there's absolutely no natural coast except this kind of tourist thing. But China is terrible, actually. It's actually going much more seriously, and it's nothing to do with the land shortage in general. It's a kind of development similar way to try and effectively combine imported resources from all over the world with a very expensive but effective land, which connects residential areas and industrial areas, as well as the third tertiary sector areas. And this, you know, the Chinese had three megalopolises. They are much bigger than Japan in each of them. So you can actually imagine how big it is. Now, to sum up the water, energy, Wood Nexus in monsoon Asia actually provided population carrying capacity in much of this early modern to the early 19th century dominance of Asia in terms of relative share in world GDP. And it goes down and it comes back with transformation of fossil fuels. So after 1950, Asia emerged as a driving force of the rise of real GDP and primary energy use. And now it is also a hotspot of global environmental problems. So coal and North America was replaced by fossil fuels and global exploitation of domestic resources. So the global exploitation of domestic resources became much tougher and severer and penetrating all over the world, particularly in the developing countries of Asia and Africa and elsewhere. Local and regional paths face tougher challenges, even compared to 1960s Japan, to make themselves sustainable, reflecting the greater forces of capitalism. Thank you.